give me a glimmer of hope again. Save me from all my wandering. If I've been looking in all the wrong places, would you turn me back around again?
Welcome to Hopecast, where our true stories brighten your day by providing insight and encouragement. I invite you to listen as my husband, Dr. Ken Brown, shares one of his amazing personal experiences that will inspire and stir your soul. Even in the challenges of life's darkest moments, you can always find a glimmer of hope through the love of God. So settle in, open your heart, and let's journey together through the power of storytelling.
Steal, kill, and destroy. When the elevator doors opened, I immediately understood why the other two Metropolitan Toronto police officers had called for backup. Down the long hallway of the subsidized apartment building, I saw this mountain of a man towering over the two uniformed constables. Despite their presence, like a human megaphone, this man was yelling in the most commanding voice at a closed apartment door to unknown people inside, "Come out and talk to me." As there was no response, he then began to slam his massive fists on the door, and every blow was like a hammer that rattled the walls and creating booming echoes that cascaded down the hall. The senior officer, standing in his shadow, was trying to calm him down and began to order him to stop attempting to break down the solid steel door that was the only thing between him and his target inside that home. Earlier that very day, he had just got out of prison, having served an 8-year stint for attempted murder. Apparently, he had just found out that his former girlfriend inside that very apartment was now with another man. I was informed that this jealous giant's name was Michael Stephen Bouquessin, and he had been an enforcer for one of the local gangs and a suspected hitman for the mafia. It was entirely obvious to us that all reason, rationality, and reasonability had already left this man because he was in such an all-consuming rage over this relational outrage. Standing well over 6'7" and at a lean and mean 330 pounds, he literally projected danger and lethality. The insanely powerful Mr. Bouquessin was a perfect impersonation of the muscular inmate who had been entirely consumed with lifting weights for each and every day of the 3,000 days he served at one of Canada's maximum security prisons. He paid absolutely no attention to the officer's direction, and instead increasingly was screaming, swearing, shouting, and spitting while continuing to smash with fist and foot at that steel drawer, trying to breach its defenses. With our arrival, there were now four officers in full uniform surrounding him, but fearlessly, he just swiveled to threaten us all with both fists balled, huge glaring eyes, chest puffed out, veins protruding from his vascular neck and leg-sized arms in an aggressive boxer stance with one foot forward. Like a cobra, he suddenly lunged at the lead officer who had ordered him to cease and desist. And so the fight was on. One officer kicked Mr. Bouquessin right in the groin, but in his fury, all that did was made him madder as he shouted, "You shouldn't ought have done that. Now you're gonna pay." With that, he picked up the officer that had just kicked him. He picked him up in the air and threw him like a rag doll about 10 or 15 feet head first down the hall to land heavily onto the floor. Spinning, he grabbed the next officer and he flipped him upside down and then threw him against the wall to land on his back with a loud smack right at his feet. But when he reached for my partner, who also happened to be my best friend, and he grabbed his arms, well, that was when he made his big mistake. Although I was not always the strongest or the fastest or the most aggressive police officer, Well, there was one thing I knew how to do and knew how to do well, and that was how to grab one single finger. While he was violently contorting my friend's wrist in his iron grip, in desperation, I snatched this beast's hand and tightly grasped just his middle finger. Then with all my strength, I quickly bent that finger back until I felt it and heard it audibly snap like a twig. Surprises never cease. Despite his greatly superior strength, he immediately let go of my partner. Holding on to that finger, I began to twist it in an arc over my head. And amazingly, now Mr. Bouquassin began to perform a ballet, seemingly completing a pirouette while he shouted out in pain. Using his anguish as the ultimate motivator, I was easily able to take him down to the ground and control him just as long as I had control of that one little finger. He started begging me to stop while I unsuccessfully did my best imitation of trying to take that finger right off his body. He suddenly went limp and stopped wiggling. Without releasing the hold, I told him to lie down on the ground with his hand behind his back, and we were able to finally place the handcuffs on this man monster. Only then was I able to tell him that he was under arrest for assaulting 3 police officers, public disturbance, and previously assaulting his former girlfriend. And then I politely provided Mr. Bouquassin the Canadian version of reading him his rights. This massive man repeatedly said that he was astonished that only 4 officers were able to capture him this time, because last time it took 8. I believe it was a combination not only of the motivation of healthy fear, but God's timely intervention that enabled us to apprehend him without a more serious use of force. When we took him to the police station in front of the video cameras and completed the use of force report, I had to explain how breaking his finger was really the only way to control most Mr. Bouquassin deranged in the given situation. Once contained in the jail cell, the sergeant in charge of the station ordered that his cuffs were to be removed. Oh, that was a big mistake. Instantly, in his torment and anger, he started to smash and slam the solid oak bench in the booking room with his uninjured hand with such force that we could only imagine what he would have done if he had not been restrained. After booking, it was my duty as the arresting officer to take him to the hospital to have the physician reset the finger that I had deliberately broken. I sincerely apologized for hurting him so badly, but told him that he just did not give me any other choice. To my astonishment, I was amazed to hear him say to me that he understood, did not blame me, and even thanked me for apologizing to him. Despite his change in demeanor, the sergeant still sent 3 other officers with me to the hospital and strictly ordered us to never take off his handcuffs or his ankle chains. Trust me, none of us had any inclination to remove any type of restraint after witnessing such a demonstration of savage, brute strength. All patched up, Mr. Bouquassin was returning to jail on the very same day that he was released. And this news strangely seemed to calm him down on the drive back to the detention center. Once again, I told him that I was sorry for the extreme force I had to use to bring him under control, but I just did not know how else I could have controlled him, as he was previously being so irrational and extremely violent. It seemed like such a waste that he had to go right back to jail, merely 14 hours after serving 8 long years in prison. But I knew that he presented such a significant risk to society at this time. With his extensive criminal record, this recent violation would give Mr. Bouquassin at least another couple more years in the slammer. With sadness, I told him that the devil was trying to steal years of his life, rob him of his beloved girlfriend, destroy all his hopes and dreams, and eventually would kill him. I shared that God really loves him, that Jesus died to forgive him of all the terrible things he had ever done to give him a fresh start. And God had a wonderful plan for his life. I asked Mr. Bukwasin to give Jesus a try, to ask him for forgiveness and help him live a better life. I begged him to call out to the Lord to save him before his lifestyle, his occupational choices, and his diabolical temper would cost him even more. It was at this point Mr. Bukwasin said that he knew all about all of this and that he had never given God a chance in his life, but knew deep inside that he should. By this time, we had arrived at the security sally port at Metro East Detention Center. I placed him into the care of four correctional officers who were already warned and ready to deal with such a troubled man. Over the next year, it was simply beyond coincidence or calculation that all three times that Mr. Bukwasin had to appear in court, God himself had arranged it for me to be the assigned officer to pick him up in the secure paddy wagon and take him to court. And every time I saw him, I stated, "Michael Stephen Bukwasin, do you know who I am?" And every time he replied, "Yes, you are the cop that tells me about God." Then I asked, "Michael, have you decided to turn your life over to God yet before the devil steals it all?" He made the same reply to me on all three occasions. "Not yet, but I am thinking about doing it." So I encouraged him by saying, "Michael, please do not wait to give God a chance." Then I did not see Mr. Bukwasin again for several years. Later, I discovered that he had pled guilty, was convicted of the assaults, and served additional time at a federal facility. You know, life is so strange. You cannot even make this up. About 3 years later, I was driving in the police car in the late winter, and the snow was just starting to melt after a particularly cold winter season. And I had just turned on a road where there was a 7-Eleven in the southeast end of Toronto. Suddenly, I saw the familiar tall silhouette of Mr. Bukwasin walking across the vacant lot through the slushy snow, and I called out to him through my open car window, "Michael Stephen Bukwasin." He turned around and only saw my police car, so he started to run away. I called out after him, "Michael, do you know who I am?" Strangely, he immediately stopped running, then turned around and called out, "Yeah, you're the cop that tells me about God." With that, he started to walk towards me. So I got out of the police car to greet him in a David meeting Goliath moment. It was only then that I saw Michael was holding his two hands up in the air as if I was about to arrest him at gunpoint. But as he got closer, I realized that both of his hands were wrapped in bloody band-aids, wrappings that were oozing pus where his fingers should have been. I heard him cry and repeatedly say to me, "I should have listened to you. I should have listened to you. And now look what they did to me." And with that, he explained how after he got out of prison and started working again for the mafia, that they had him collect protection money for the mob. From the local businesses. Somehow, one dark night, a couple of weeks before, he was ambushed and mugged by a gang just after midnight. They took all of the money he had just collected, mercilessly beat him up, knocking him unconscious, and then left him to die in the frozen night when it was a bitter 30 degrees below freezing. Waking up several hours later, he was taken to a hospital. But the doctors had to remove all of his fingers on both of his hands because of the extreme frostbite injury. That was when Michael took the rags off and showed me the raw and oozing nubs of his bleeding fingers with the bones openly exposed. He was obviously in such tremendous pain and only had thumbs left on both of his hands. I felt so sorry for him because Michael was in such torment and his wounds were so grievous. I told him that I cared for him and I wished that this had never happened to him. And then I reminded him that the devil was trying to steal, kill, and destroy his life and was taking him apart one piece at a time First he lost his freedom, then the only woman he had ever loved, then his time and his career, and now he had lost all his fingers and was condemned to live in pain as a disabled person for the rest of his life. I tenderly asked him, Michael, how much more will you have to suffer? How much more will you have to lose until you finally give in and beg God to forgive you for all those people you've hurt and then ask Jesus to take over your life? He said, I know I should have done this before. I want to do it. I'm going to do it. I really am going to do it someday. Then he thanked me for showing him kindness through the years and telling him about God. His last words to me were, goodbye, see you around. And then, like a broken old man, he shuffled off across that soggy ice field into the night. I have never seen him since, but I've often wondered what happened to him. I find myself praying not only for this tormented man, but all the Michael Stephen Bouquessines in the world who trust in their own self-sufficiency and their own potency, only living for the present without regard for their eternal future or how much their destructive lifestyles will eventually cost them in the inevitable end of time. John 10:9-10 says that the devil wants to steal, kill, and destroy us, but Jesus has come to give us an abundant life full of love and hope. God graciously gives us the precious gift of free will, but with the responsibility of choice. So, who will you serve, and what future will be your destiny? I implore you to choose carefully. Respectfully submitted, retired Constable Kenneth Brown, 5720, Metropolitan Toronto Police Force.
Thank you for tuning into Hopecast for inspiring stories that will touch your heart. If today's story encouraged you, then please subscribe to our channel and visit us at hopecast.org to learn more. You can also watch the video version of this story and many more from Dr. Brown on our Hopecasts YouTube or listen on our Spotify, Apple, or Amazon Music podcasts. Until next time, keep holding on to hope and please share these stories with someone who really needs encouragement. May God bless you.
I've been searching and I've been seeking. It seems like you're nowhere to be found. And I'd do anything just to see you. If I close my eyes, will I see you now? 'Cause I know faith holds. And what can be seen? But my hope feels like a distant dream. Give me a glimmer of hope again. Save me from all my wandering. If I've been looking in all the wrong places, would you turn me back around?